as I go, so I know my last bite will have bits in it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'll do that if I'm alone, I think. But if I'm not alone,
That's the way I want my soup.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I will try to do that, but, impulse control. Sometimes you just want one piece of it more than the other. The rest of
it. Sometimes it's hard to get, like, a proper amount of the actual stuff in the soup. It's like, oh, I got too much.
I feel like spooner and my chopsticks. Ramen, it's almost impossible.
Right, yeah.
Like, ramen, will always have, like, half a thing full of broth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, like, it's not as, unless it's, like, good ramen, you know? But if you're having, like, top ramen, that broth ain't drinkable. You can drink it.
I'll drink some of it. I certainly won't finish my bowl. I won't finish my bowl, yeah. But
your lips will dry out if you drink it.
Right. I'll be like, I need a little more salt. And then be like, oh, not that much.
Yeah. Let me make my tongue dry.
Welcome to Can I Kick It? This is a podcast about film festivals. My name is Emilio Diaz. Joining me today is
Andy Gramuga.
Kyle Hatchley.
Here we are today. We're going to talk about a little documentary that played Sundance a couple of weeks, I guess more than a month ago. Time has passed too quickly.
For sure.
It's March.
It is March.
Time marches on.
Buddy.
March 4th. The only date that's a
March the 4th be with you.
The only day that's in what?
The only day that's like a verb or whatever. Or an, just
March
an
4th.
March 4th. Yeah.
What about, never mind.
Also, isn't it March? You couldn't come up
with one off the top of your head.
No, I could. I just
asshole.
Can't say it.
It also, this is irrelevant considering when we're putting this episode out, but it is March 5th.
That's right. But yesterday was March 4th.
I guess.
Sure. I think Andy just was like, here's a fun fact about the month March.
We were talking about how it's March. What do you want from me? I had a thing to say.
I'm defending you. I like the fact.
All right.
It made me think it seemed like you liked
the fact.
Well, I wasn't trying to cut it down by thinking of another one. I was just trying to think of another one as a little funny thing to say.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about Richard Linklater's first episode of the documentary series God Save Texas.
You got it. Exactly right.
I got that exactly right.
This episode is Hometown Prison.
Hometown Prison. Yes. Before that, we might have some news. And we're back. Andy.
Yeah.
Introduce the thing. What are we talking about?
Great. So God Save Texas, it's a three-part documentary series spearheaded by Richard Linklater. It's based on a book by Lawrence Wright, who is, of course, a well-known nonfiction author. The most thing I know him from is writing Going Clear, the Scientology book, which was, I guess, he expanded off of like a New Yorker article for the book, I think.
Which also eventually became a documentary by Alex Gibney, who's a producer on this as well.
That's right.
And then I think they did Looming Tower together as well.
That does make sense. Yes.
Yep. Seems like Looming Tower was a book. He wrote Looming Tower before Going Clear, but Looming Tower, the adaptation came after Going Clear.
Right, the Hulu original, which I watched like 3 or 4 episodes of, but never finished.
They love that on The Ringer.
Sure, that makes sense. It's, you know, it's like a, it's got like Alec Baldwin in an office being like, what do we know? Like that sort of thing.
Sure.
But yes, Lawrence Wright, he's a nonfiction author. He is Texas based, I believe. He's a Texan. And so Richard Linklater collaborated with two other filmmakers, Alex Stapleton and Ileana Sosa, to each make, who are all Texan themselves. Everyone in this is like sort of examining a current event topic related to their background in Texas. So you have Linklater's, whose first episode is the longest at a little under 90 minutes, is talking about the prison system in his hometown, the name of which is escaping me at the moment.
Huntsville, Texas.
Huntsville, thank you. It's been over 24 hours since I watched this, and I also watched the other two, so I might have lost some details. And then Alex Stapleton is looking at the oil industry in Texas and the way that sort of the oil boom left behind black people who lived in Texas and has like negative environmental impacts on where black people live in relation to the oil refineries and things like that. And then Ileana Sosa is looking at immigration and the border, looking specifically at the border town there, and talking about sort of the current immigration climate, which as you can imagine is not very good. But yeah, so it's this project that the first, I think, two of them premiered at Sundance, and then all three have gone up on Max as of a couple of weeks ago as you're hearing this. It is it's an HBO documentary film sort of banner project. And so they have got these out there. But yeah, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if, like, has Linklater done nonfiction documentary stuff really before?
I think a little bit with, I forget his name, but Bennett Miller made that movie The Cruise about this guy, Speed, I think is his name, and he was like a New York character.
Yes,
guy.
I remember the he's the tour guide, right?
Yes.
He's like,
and
right.
I think Richard Linklater collaborated with him a few times.
Right, I remember that because that was an early Hulu original, was a show about him.
Sure.
But then
I think, like, you know, he's dabbled in other things, and as the hometown prison shows, there's like the original documentary he was trying to shoot in like 2003.
Right. Yes.
But I think he's like dabbled in it.
But yeah. But having watched all three, I think I'm the only one who's watched all three, correct?
Yes. I did not watch the other two.
They all sort of have a similar structure where they are very like the filmmaker is like on camera and like they all, like all of them have like the filmmaker having like extensive conversations with Lawrence Wright about the mm-hmm. topic that they're discussing and like traveling around Texas with him, in addition to them like interviewing like a lot of people who are like personally touched by all these issues and like their families and things like that. So it's like it's an interesting style, I think, for like a docu-series where it is like three distinct voices are all going to examine a different issue and make it so personal. And I'm not sure, like, I've seen a good amount of Linklater stuff, but like him being so front and center and like him like being on camera and narrating and stuff was like really striking to me. Cause I was like, I don't think I've ever seen this side of him, of like him just sort of like being a guy on camera. So that was really, that was one of the things that struck me most watching it.
There's obviously like that sort of, I think it's kind of the last section of Waking Life, right? Is that when he comes in and he's in like in the pinball shop?
Yeah, he's in that. He's in Slacker too, right?
Yeah, he's in Slacker.
He's also got I've listened to his commentaries for some of his movies, and he's a very candid guy. You see him in like behind the scenes footage and things like that. There was a lot of behind the scenes footage of Everybody Wants Some. And a lot of him just like talking about mm-hmm. the era, and even like when we talked about Apollo 10 and a half,
right?
That is like so his life or whatever,
right? Well, this is right because he's like he obviously makes incredibly personal films and like based on his life films, but like yeah, him being like, just like, just him being in it, I thought was like very striking.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
And even like beyond personal, like, in movies like Slacker and Waking Life, he is kind of, you do kind of see like, there are some documentary tendencies in his work, even if there are documentaries of him being just kind of a guy who likes pointing a camera at people and being like, hey, just like do whatever you do.
Like the way Alex Jones is in that one, right? And they're like, well, he was just like a guy who, around in Texas or whatever, who like
an eccentric character.
Oh, and obviously Bernie also has like a mix.
Yeah,
of,
that's very
real people talking about like the regions of Texas and stuff.
Well,
and,
I mean, this is the thing of just his deep interest in humanity and what makes the fucking documentary so good.
Let's get into it, Colin. Talk about what you loved about this, because seem to have responded.
I mean, I think it is very, like we're saying, just the way that it gets into his career and his life in the town and how all these things of just like, oh, this is the guy from like the football team, and now it's like, here's his story of the fucking, he became the warden, he became this, he did this, and then it's like the way that the movie goes through each of those stories is very affecting, and like the most affecting, at least for me, being the little kid who's just like talking about wanting to play football with his dad, it made me so sad. That scene I thought was so tough.
A little bit more about what the structure of like this actual episode is, which is like, Linklater sort of starts off with this 2003 execution that he like took an interest in, and like sort of taking it from the perspective of like, I was like very interested in like the death penalty still being like this thing that feels very archaic you know, he frames it sort of that way.
The specific prison is like the highest death penalty or you know, execution rate in like the country or whatever.
The prison in his hometown where he grew up, and he's sort of engaging with
Of the main industry in the town is sort of the angle that he's talking about. He has this footage from back then, and then he sort of talks to cuts to now, and is really just sort of interested in like getting at every aspect of like what it means to have this prison in this place. And so he is like talking to people from like every possible angle of that sort of fact.
We say cut to now, it is 2019, right?
There's a few different times, I think. Cause you definitely do see people with masks and stuff. That's more in the later ones.
I remember seeing a date for 2019. I don't know if I saw another one, but I just didn't remember it.
The project, this says it was announced in March 2022, so I don't know.
Sure, maybe he just was filming.
He might have been a guy who just had a lot of footage of a bunch of different times and just like him in his hometown. So I don't know. So,
but the thing that is very compelling about it is just like, taking a single person involved with this thing, showing their story and like how they compartmentalize dealing with murder in this way. And it is very crazy when they get to like the lady who's the witness and has the folders for every single execution she's witnessed. And it's just like the first one that she breaks at is where the guy looks like her grandpa. And it's like, how deep do you have to go to like get to that point where you're just thinking about it? But and that's like what is fascinating about the movie is just like all these people and like what their feelings are on living near this thing. Like when they're on the college campus and all the kids are like, yeah, it's fucked up and no one really talks about it.
Or I try not to think about it. Like, and you know, his tone and like demeanor in particular, I think, is really effective for getting at this, because he is so like soft-spoken and like so willing to meet people where they're at and just like listen to them no matter sort of like what they're bringing to him. And he like, you know, he talks to people from all sort, like people who work in the prison and and all that, but also people who like town eccentrics who have long been opposed to the prison, and people who are protesting, and the families of victims and the families of inmates who are being released, and all these different things. And he does sort of like, yeah, it's just like he is a nice sort of even, steady presence throughout this, like, and does allow sort of give everyone the space to sort of like speak their piece, which I really responded to.
Yeah, and I think he's also good at I guess it's this is maybe more of an edit thing. I guess with all documentaries, you don't see the entire interview, so how you can't right. really know this. But it doesn't seem like he's asking a lot of very pointed questions of any of these people. It's more just like he's asking, so how do you feel about this? And he just sort of lets people go off in any direction, because it's some people approach it very differently. Like, there's like the weird town eccentric of the guy who like owns all the land and the conservation stuff, and he goes like on a tangent and talking about how Sam Houston and the founding of Texas, and how that's a sort of like how the history of Texas sort of affects how they feel about the death penalty in certain ways. And then he talks to other people who are like more involved in the prison, and they will just give a very personal story about like the things they have witnessed and how that makes them feel to this day. And it's like, it's really good. It's sort of got to me in a lot of moments. I'll say it really like hits in some, I think that's sort of the power of the Linklater thing, of just like him being curious, and he just like allows people to feel however they feel about these things, and he just lets people talk, and you get to some real like deep-seated emotional stuff that is very like things that you never expected to see.
I agree, Colin, that the young child was very emotionally affecting. Also,
I mean, you see the family too, of like the woman who's excited when her brother gets home, and it's just like the pure like human happiness. It's really, or you mean the moment at the end when it's like they've got the footage from 2003 where they get to stay at finally,
right. at the very last possible
moment. And she just like can't help herself, and she's just like screaming hallelujah and like everything. It's so
right.
just like.
She like runs
you don't believe it. There's like the lady down, running on the road and like rolling around on the ground. Yeah. It's just like devastating.
And I mean, I guess just talking about the moments we like is maybe a better way to get at this. I really like the last kid high school kid he interviews.
That moment is, go ahead. It's a great thing that he like to get to that as like the final thing of what is happening at this town.
Yeah. I was just like, he eventually gets to him talking about how since a lot of like people
2015.
A lot of people in the town have sort of gotten tired of the prison industry and have found it sort of difficult to find work there, find the energy to work there. So a lot of African immigrants have come into the town and have taken up positions at these places, and he like goes into a church that's mostly like African people, and he gets some footage there, and then he talks to the kid of one of the employees of the prison who's a kid of an African immigrant, and they just have a very like fairly pleasant, interesting conversation about like how he feels about how he feels like the town being so prison forward, and what he wants to do with his life, and how he feels about living in Texas and coming to a place for this and reckoning with all that. And it's sort of the documentary at its best, and the Linklater thing at its best, where it's just like, it's both very emotional, but also sort of loose and funny. And it manages to be all those things at the same time.
And also the sort of push and pull of like, there is this thing at the center, but then also the kid's like, I'm the school mascot, and I like love our high school and our team, like, I bleed green. And Linklater's like, yeah, that'll never leave you.
Yeah.
It's really, it's beautiful.
When he's, like, walking out as, like, the homecoming king or whatever, yeah. And he's, like, making little funny walks or whatever.
Yeah, he's a very, yeah. It's a funny kid. And he
wants to be a model.
It's yeah, very, I'm going to be a model. He's, like, IG model. It's really awesome.
And it's so nice when Linklater's like, oh, yeah, my parents never got what I did till I was 30 either. That's such a, like, nice yeah. little conversation. Moment they have,
right?
So good.
There's also, I mean, just little things of Linklater, where he's like a former classmate of his who ended up becoming the warden, and it's like him and his son are walking, and Linklater's like, did he tell you all the stories about him being like a stud in high school on the baseball team or like the football yeah. team?
And the kid's like, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, that's a classic dad thing to do. But then that guy is also, it's just like another crazy thing where he's like, yeah, it's like 300 people that I saw happen. And
after right, the first and right. one, well, and also, right, talking about his journey, like, of how, like, his evolving perspective, like, yeah. and how he, like, gives the space for him to be like, yeah, like, I, you know, my thinking at the time was, like, the law is the law, and, like, you know, whatever, and you hear all these, sure, these yeah. sorts of justifications for it, and then, like, he, you know, he's like, and what is your perspective now? And he's like, unequivocally, I think it's a bad thing, and, like, we should abolish it, or whatever, however yeah. he phrases it. But
that was the other guy, right?
Yeah, that's the guy he played baseball with?
Yeah. Oh, who's sure. like, I forget the lady's name, but...
Oh, right, woman. And he whose job it was to, like, strap people down.
Yes, he was the... Right. Yeah, that's crazy. And he's like, yeah. I'll sit and talk with them for 8 hours or whatever before.
Yeah, and he, when they just talk... I mean, that... When he said he talked to them for 8 hours, and then... The way that ends of him telling the story of him talking to his pastor and his pastor being like, oh, you know, sometimes things isn't like a drop of water like hits yeah. a vase and then eventually the vase overflows and you just can't take it anymore. It's just such a like crazy poetic thing to drag out of something so like,
yeah,
kind of like evil and heinous and like bad. I mean, it's so crazy.
That does seem to be the through line, though. It's like all these people get into this thing because they know it's like a job they can get. And right. then eventually they can't deal with the murder anymore and they have to quit. And they have to be like, this is actually terrible what we're doing.
Yeah. And the witness lady, when she said the moment she quit, when it was like just the guy stared at the ceiling for all the whole time and he didn't say anything. It was just like,
yeah, it's yeah,
it's yeah. so it's so brutal sometimes. It's so crazy.
Yeah, it can be really, like, chilling, mm-hmm. All the descriptions. And then there's, like, the montage of her in the news, like, talking about all of
like, right,
the
last because her words. Job was, like, to give the media, like, an accounting of all the facts of how it happened. Yeah. So she had to, like, have all the little details just sort of ready to go.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And
yeah.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Andy.
Just, like, yeah, you see her, like, and in all the footage, like, she like her hairstyle like that you can tell like it's like you feel the weight of like how long she must have done this for.
Oh, and when you see the drawer of all the files, it is right. crazy, like literally compartmentalizing.
Yeah, it is literally like you can see the weight this has on people's hearts just like
yeah.
on camera, and it is crazy, and it's so crazy that those moments exist in between these like. Very interesting moments of Linklater kind of looking back at the town and being like, oh yeah, I remember like remembering like everybody wants some, like these are the sort yeah. of houses we grew up in, these are the guys
the house.
And it just sort of it is sort of very fascinating to look at his work through that lens of just like, yeah, this is where I learned all this stuff and this is where it's set. Like Dazed and Confused is about a town where I grew up in where like there was a 1,000 people prison where they killed people all the time, and it's just
yeah
so crazy. But I think it also highlights the point he's trying to make of just like this is both a crazy thing that is a center of the town, but also just like people live here and people have feelings about that sort of thing, but also we just like get up in the morning and we eat breakfast or whatever. It's sort of
right, you can't
yeah kids eat
they're unable Sundays. To focus on it yeah My favorite was Bill Habern, I think his name.
Yes,
the civil rights attorney.
Who passed away, I think, last year. I saw.
Right,
I
was looking him up. In the MMRA, wasn't he? And it gets at sort of the history of like the way the school system used to be so closely tied to that sort of like prison attitude, and talking about like corporal punishment in the schools and how he like fought to like against having like paddling to be like okay thing for a school to do to a student, like, or like, and kick them out if they like a student refuses to submit to it or whatever. But yeah, just seeing, yeah, the interview with him was the most emotional moment for me. I think he was, yeah, and just like all the things that you can see that he has like fought his whole life to try to achieve.
Yeah,
it's very powerful.
And I mean, the other through line of the movie is all the stuff about Linklater's mom, who was very active in all this, you know, as he gets into it, like greeting people outside of the prison as soon as they're released. Formerly like all the people that she dated, and they get into the guy
she had an interesting life.
Yeah, the corrections officer who is like they do in Boyhood also, where it's like one of the guys the mom dates. And then lawyer was also involved with Linklater's mom at one point.
Sure, and they talk about how she was at one point was married to someone who was in the prison because she thought it would help him. Get out, and then like the marriage was annulled at some point. Like, just like really like interesting sort of like big life choices. He talks about all his different stepdads at various points.
Yeah
So crazy. The lawyer guy, I think maybe it's the lawyer guy or maybe it's the guy with like the conservationist thing, but one of them, they have a conversation about like, listen, it's hard to live, it's hard to be like a sort of left-leaning radicalish person in Texas, but it's like we care about the people here, even though a lot of them don't agree with us, so we're gonna stay here and do the work, even if a lot of people are gonna be sort of anti that. And it's
The guy who's like the I forget his name, but the conservationist we keep mentioning, there's a great bit where he is like, they all tell me to go to Boulder, Colorado. And he's like, but I've been there. And they're all, he's like, there's no one to educate. They're all sitting there drinking tea, letting the world melt around them. And he's like, but I got to be down here fighting.
And yeah. Like, yeah, and then he shows off his kitsch collection.
Yeah, he's got the big museums.
It's funny, the part where he shows his parents' graves, and next day it's like, oh yeah, and that's my grave. And he's like, they're going to have to make it a little bigger.
And then like, when he's like, here's the wall of, or the hall of,
yeah, the Rogues,
like,
Gallery.
Evil, right, the Rogues Gallery. And then he's like, do people bring like field trips here or whatever? And he's like, nope, I keep pitching it. I keep pitching it to them, but they refuse.
like the Native American Atrocity Museum or whatever.
Right,
where it's like all the stuff of like Andrew Jackson being evil and like the Trail of Tears. And then he like points to Bush and Cheney. He's like, these are the two most evil men and the most in the history of American politics. A lot of funny Bush stuff where he's like, I think there was the thing he said about where he's like, I think we should be able to use, or he's like, we should be able to try 14-year-olders.
Right. Yeah. As adults. Just like, just all the tough on crime politician stuff. You know, Rick Perry, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Well,
and it's interesting, I didn't know the history of, like, it was unconstitutional to have the death penalty for a time in Texas,
and then they brought it back,
and then like have like did so many
that's a good moment where Linklater's like, I remember there were people protesting when they were bringing it back, and he's like, but then I realized that they were all in favor of it.
Yeah,
just like the close-ups on signs of like all these people just saying evil things, but it was crazy.
Oh yeah, that footage from like the Black Panthers versus KKK.
Yes, outside the guy's house,
and the Black Panther guy is like, "You were talking shit, now I'm here. Yeah. Now you're not saying shit." That's such funny footage. It's so
he's like, "Big man."
Yeah,
that was awesome.
It is interesting how. I feel like, I mean, he's using like almost a full complement of documentary techniques of using like archival footage and also new footage he shots and interview and like voiceover stuff. And it is interesting how he balances using all of that stuff. I feel like a lot of the archival stuff he likes using as setup, but mostly he's interested in like the interviews and the like more present day things about the town. Because that's just like, that's his style. I think he just likes people.
He
just likes talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of a thing where I feel like over the last couple of years I've been very Linklater pill, where I've been really like, I think he's one of my guys in a way that I used to not be. And I feel like I'm just in a place in my life where I think his kind of movie making is really speaking to me.
It did make me think of Jonathan Demme a lot, where it's just like, oh, he made like a humanist documentary, and it's just like, that's the perfect thing for him, because it's just about how much he likes people and like lets people tell their stories. And then I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, you can easily sort of draw the lines between these guys.
A thing that has been commented on his work and maybe a more negative or controversial light, it's like his willingness to just let people talk does sometimes maybe give a little, he's maybe a little too soft on bad people sometimes in terms of just like letting them do whatever they're gonna do, in a way of just like, in like the Alex Jones thing or whatever that it, or
sure,
other ways of where it's just like, there is sometimes,
right, he's not gonna challenge
them. He's not a real like a person with like that strong a voice of just like challenging people and having that much of his own perspective, well, not perspective, but his own opinions color the whole thing. But I think I generally would rather that than like,
right,
things with more of their own,
right, because a certain voice. Right, that at a certain point I think does sort of become like, it becomes a show, right? Or like it feels artificial, sort of like, you know, I think there is a value to like letting people exist as they are and like and capturing that and then like letting the chips fall where they may. And like, and the way he talks about too, like the overall like public attitude towards the death penalty and all that, and like his perspective of like, oh, I thought like when like if I was so naive to think that like if people knew that there was even one like provably false, incorrect execution of someone who was like provably not guilty of their crime, then like then everyone would all of a sudden be like, wait, we can't do this ever because like it's possible for that. And then he was like, and then I was surprised to find that like that what people don't really think about it that way, or that wasn't really the case. And then like sort of talking about how like, yeah, and it seems like public opinion is just generally trending towards like thinking of it as cruel and unusual and like not something that like is should be a part of the justice system. His not being necessarily like an activist voice in describing that process, I think is an interesting approach, and I felt it was effective in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There is a great moment at the end where it is like intercutting the archival footage of the high school like football game or whatever with the current year, as there's like another execution happening like during the game, or like just that he's cutting between this current modern day execution and this pep rally where everyone's like just trying to get by or whatever. And it's like, just underlining the whole thing of how people live with it. And there's like a few other of the places like where people that he'll follow for a second. There's the bus, you know, the Greyhound Depot, where they're the guy's like talking about all the tickets that he gives out.
Right. And how he like can tell if they're going to be back or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That he's like over the years, he can tell by the body language whether or not they'll be back. And then there's the lady who's the prison guard or the corrections officer, where it's just like an example of someone who's like, this place is nearby and is a job. And like,
right, it's a job. And yeah, and she's like going to school at the same time and like wants to work for the, I think the CIA or FBI, the FBI. I forget which one.
Yeah, it's all very fascinating. And I think it gets the people that he talks to and like we're saying, the way that he talks to them.
Yeah.
Gives everybody a chance to like.
Right. And like, and it be like the hometown stuff too. Like he goes to like visit a couple of his childhood homes or whatever. And like, there's the one where he like talks to the lady about how he like built the like storage, like shed or whatever that's on their property. And he's like, oh, I thought it would, I didn't think this would last this long. Like it's all pretty much the same. Yeah. And talks about like, yeah, how long they've been there. And
like how, and what a pain in the ass it is to mow that huge yard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Funny. Right. And then she's like, she's got the push mower. And
he's like... there was the, but there's also the bit at the end that is like, it's a very like, interesting thing to include like right at the end where it's the family of like the victims where they're like, I don't have any sympathy for the guy, like and they're talking about like an eye for an eye and they release the balloons and everything, but it's just like on the other side of this protest that's happening is
right,
the people who
are finding some
get their process, frontier justice in Texas.
Cause like to the extent he goes to make a point, I do think one of the more salient points he ends up doing in voiceover in the documentary is being like, one of the like moral rots of the death penalty is just like, you took this murder and now we're doing another murder, but this version of the murder implicates all these other different people in it. And now you're making it, you're putting this like charge of conscience on so many people of just like, well, now the prison guards and like, the people in the states and lawyers now all have
the witnesses, all the media.
Now this is all of their cross to bear also. So it's like a completely disproportionate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's a very heavy thing to deal with. So I think it is sort of.
And then I think like it. As recent as like a couple weeks ago, there was another huge execution in Huntsville where it was like some guy who they like didn't have, he was claiming innocence since like 2000 or whatever, and they executed him. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, there's another thing he talks about where it's like, you know, in other states when people, they find enough of like wrongful convictions, they like stop, they like halt executions for a while, but not in Texas. They do not stop
them. It's not the Texas attitude,
which is dark to think about. But I think it is sort of interesting to think of him of as a character in it, of like, there are certain things you could read of just like, maybe there's some guilt there of just like, well, he left this place and he sort of is coming at this from it an outsider perspective, even if he's from here, and he like talks about his mom, who is somebody he feels like did try and stay there and do the work, and all these people who tried to stay there and do the work. And I remember like, oh, weird part that stuck with me when he's interviewing his old baseball buddy, when he first introduces the topic of talking about the death penalty stuff, he's like, well, you know, I went to Houston and worked on an offshore drilling rig while the death penalty came back here, so I wasn't here for that, but you were, so what are your feelings about it? And there, it is sort of like an interesting thing to read on him.
Yeah,
but I think
and I would say, just as someone who has watched the other two episodes of this, they, you know, those stories are similarly personal, and like the overall series spine of like Lawrence Wright is really interesting, because like the book, the series is credited as inspired by his book, and I don't know, like I probably should have looked this up a little more before, but like how much the book is focused on like these issues specifically, or how much it's just like about like the government of Texas as a whole. And
the filmmakers are sort of like each jumping off of that. But it is like, it's an interesting structure for it. And I do like the way that it, yeah, it allows, you know, the personal stakes for each filmmaker to sort of come through in each episode. And like, you know, it, and it's interesting how Lawrence Wright becomes like someone who's like listening and asking questions and stuff, and not necessarily is like, not necessarily is the one providing the answers, or like is like the way that it takes the inspiration from his book to then like have these other voices tell the story, I think is like, it's a very interesting structural conceit for like a documentary project like that. It's like him being like front and like very present in all three parts was like something that was very interesting to me, having watched all three of them in like within a 24-hour span, like in a very short amount of time.
I don't really think I have anything more to say about it. I mean,
we're
talking about it here because we think it is worth watching,
because it is very good.
I think it is very good, and it is the sort of thing where it's just like, it kind of gets dumped onto Max, and even though it had a Sundance premiere, it's not like, I feel like there were some good notices of it from Sundance, but not as much, being it being like a TV series kind of thing. But I do think it's just like a thing worth watching, like as much as any Richard Linklater thing is worth watching.
Yes, it's as important to the Linklater arc as anything else that he's made.
I mean, yeah. And it did, you know, I did get to think about, oh boy, can't wait to see Merrily We Roll Along in 20 years or whatever while I was watching it.
Or his new French New Wave movie where Zoe Deutsch is playing Gene Seberg.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, God, what an interesting guy, how, like, he'll put this out and then, like, also Hitman.
Yeah.
Like, within, they're coming out within, like, 3 months of each other or whatever. And, like, such different, like, goals and, like, approaches and, like, sort of sensibilities, but both, like, very distinctly Linklater, Ian.
Yeah.
It's great. I love the versatility.
Yeah. And I do think, like, yeah, they are very different things. One is a sort of romantic comedy, and the other one is a very gritty documentary about this important topic, but they both, you can see the humanism is present in both of them. There is sort of like a desire to engage with weird, funny people, and it sort of speaks to just how you can't knock it out of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And the way he's able to have like such a collection of like pet themes that like he's able to like bring them to the forefront in different projects too. Like, I love like how much he is interested in, like how many different things he is interested in, but like there still is like the unifying thing tying them all together.
Yeah. That's what being an artist is. I've seen Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie's good.
Bernie's good.
I haven't seen it in a while, but at the time I was like, this is an incredible movie.
That was one where I was like, I think I was like, I told my parents to watch it. I was like, you guys should check out Bernie.
It's a classic parents. You'll love this movie.
Yeah.
Where'd you go, Bernadette, School of Rock, Bernie, just like all of these movies are made by the same person, but and like you completely get it, and it also seems crazy at a distance. Boyhood, the Before movies,
right? I know. Yeah.
Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears.
Scanner Darkly.
I was thinking after I watched it, I was like, should I watch Suburbia? I was like, I need to like finish.
I need to just see all of them because
Was it last year I saw Slacker? Maybe it was. I think so
because we did Waking Life and we did Apollo 10 and a half. Or that was 22.
That was 22. I think I did Slacker after that, but I don't remember if it was late 22, 23.
Right.
But
Slacker we did like the other animated, the other animated things, the other rotoscope things.
Slacker is like such a me movie of just like that. This is what I want movies to be. It's like you just walk around and you find interesting people and you let them do funny things.
I gotta see it.
And then And I mean, that's also a movie that is like infused with like the spirit of Texas. So obviously, that is a very Austin movie. Whereas,
yeah,
this is about the rest of it. Someday we'll do the Fast Food Nation episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actively working on that, right? That was.
I'm sure we'll do a Hitman episode.
Probably. This is, I mean,
everyone likes that movie.
You still haven't seen it, right?
I haven't got to see it yet.
Yeah,
Colin is the
one. I'll have to wait like everyone else.
God, I hope they give it a real theatrical.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I saw Maestro in a theater, so maybe I'll get a chance to see old Hitman.
Sure.
That's such a good. It's so. That movie's so funny. That movie's so good.
Yeah, I can't.
And now that we know Glenn Powell's box office dynamite.
I know. It's like. We almost, maybe we knew that 5 years ago when we could have just cut out the middleman and put a movie in a theater. No, not have to hope that Netflix maybe does it because it might make the money. It's fine. They gave Avatar a second season that'll cost $900 million. Where's that money coming from? Who knows? They can write any check with a Netflix logo on it and it'll check to see if it works. Never mind.
Listen, I have plenty of things to say about Netflix. I will not be watching Avatar Season 2.
Not until they put me on it.
What? Why would I be on Avatar?
You're always breaking wind, right?
Low blow, an airbender. Cullen. Are we really resorting to that level of crassness on this episode about the death penalty?
Okay, don't. Now I'm complicit. That guilt's on my shoulders.
Yeah. Boy, oh, some very tasteless things crossing through my mind right now. Not saying any of them.
Then, you know, one thing I'll just say.
Sure, yeah.
Not any grand wrapping up, just another thing that I thought was interesting was him talking about this... football movie he wanted to make that he didn't get to, about like the two high school football players that end up on both sides of the law.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that when I saw that, I was just like, you should just make this now.
Yeah, now is the time, Richard.
I do think, like, if there was ever a time to pitch a football movie and get a budget, I think,
right,
you could do it. Like, I think,
yeah. But it's just like this interesting thing of this huge football town, and then. Also, they have the prison, and it's just like a lot of people end up there one way or another.
God, I feel like if Linklater had similar to like the Soderbergh HBO or whatever deal or whatever, where sure. They just like let him put something out once a year or twice a year, depending on what it was, and like, you know, nowadays they would give it a cursory theater run. I guess Soderbergh's not doing it for Max anymore, but like. I don't know. I mean, feel like
it's so crazy that the thing of him shit talking Netflix came out like 2 weeks before Hitman got, or maybe like the same week.
Right. Where he's like Apollo 10 and a half sort of just disappeared. Like,
yeah, Apollo 10 and a half disappeared. They didn't give it a release, and then it was like, and Netflix has Hitman.
I feel like I was too rude to Apollo 10 and a half.
Yeah, and that's a movie where I'm like. I feel like if you're talking about it critically, then it's just like, I feel like I kind of have to say some bad things about it, but it's like, who's going to hold Apollo 10 and a half against it? He just like made a little animated movie about Houston. He just wanted to do that. That's just good for you, man. That's fun.
At the time, I was just like, I don't like this listing. I don't really care. But now I'm like, I'm actually glad that that is a movie that is out. I feel like I didn't do my due diligence in supporting it. It's just like the new Dick Tracy TCM special.
Okay. We can't get into that. that is like an important word.
He's a guy where it is just like he is always popular, but he is always also like out of fashion in a weird way. Where it's like everyone loved Everybody Wants Some. But then no one GAF about Last Flag Flying or Where Do You Go Bernadette or Apollo 10 and a Half.
I mean, well, the weird thing about him is he is kind of the sort of guy who just, like, it's sort of interesting to think about him and Kevin Smith sort of together. As like,
well, there's the crew of Sundance people where it's like Linkletter, Kevin Smith, PTA, and Quentin Tarantino. As yeah. like this early 90s Sundance, these are the wunderkind. Like, and Soderbergh can throw in, he's a little different because he had 80s movies, right? And then like...
Yeah. Well, movie. It's a sex slice. But I guess just like him and Kevin Smith are kind of guys who operate basically just in cult classics, where it's like if you see any of his movies, it's just like none of these. School of Rock is sort of like the exception for like later, where it's like that's a big hit movie, but it's like and then Boyhood is like big Oscar success. Oscars. But outside of that, it is just like. These are movies that the people who see them really like them.
Yeah, that's true. That the is sort of befores are critical darlings.
Yeah, the before critical darlings.
And of course, we love Where to Go, Bernadette. And I love Last Flag Flying.
Sure. But even then, it's just like, yeah. It's like those movies weren't hit. Some people like them.
Yeah.
But, that's true.
Yeah. It will be interesting, yeah, when we do eventually get to Fast Food Nation, because I don't know of anyone who sticks up for that one, really.
I know some people like parts of that movie. I mean, sure. I feel like Orson Welles, that's a weird one. Or it's just,
I feel like
that's
Orson Welles, the thing I hear about, this right. is good. That's one I feel like people are like, Efron isn't maybe the right at the right level in that one or whatever, but I think the rest of it is good. Is maybe the impression that I get. Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious about that
one.
He is
sort of interesting in that way where it's like he does sort of work in his space a lot. So whenever he makes a movie that is like seems like not Texas-y at all, then it's sort of like, that's interesting, man. Which is why I'm interested in the French New Wave movie, because I'm just like, I don't know what this is. Just like cook. Do whatever you want to do there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's someone that needs to be allowed to cook is a good way to put it.
Yeah,
like a Scanner Darkly, that movie might be awesome.
I know when we did that episode, Andy was the one who watched it. He was like, "That's the one I like the best out of these." So
right,
yeah.
But Waking Life, it sort of took me 2 tries to really.
Sure.
I mean, Waking Life, I just
right. I mean, Scanner Darkly is like the one that's like
it has like a plot.
It has a story. It, yeah, yeah. It's like an adaptation of a literary source. Like.
Yeah, Philip K. Dick. He's the kind of guy where I would love to talk with him about, like, what are you reading? Like, what?
Sure. He should do a Soderbergh media diary.
He did one of those Criterion Channel Adventures in Movie Going.
Sure.
Which is he's just a great guy to listen to talk, I think. And you can listen to his Days of Confused commentary on Spotify on some weird fake podcast that's just DVD commentaries re-uploaded.
Sure. Well, yeah, when Criterion Channel like had all the like a collection of his stuff,
right?
They had like a lot of weird oddities too. Like he did like a super cut of like the countdowns of movie, like the eight, like the big like boop boop.
Oh, sure.
Like 8, 7. He apparently like collected odds and ends of those and like put them all together and like. That is just a thing that he like directed and made that you can watch.
Yeah, here we go. Heads I win, tails you lose. Film countdowns and tail leaders.
Yeah.
240 minutes long.
Right. And I think it's literally just those. Like, so it's that's like awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it is just sort of like merrily we roll along. Like I would love to hear what his thoughts on Sondheim are, or like what attracted him. To what that. Is
right?
He's a really he's a smart guy.
Yeah, I mean, because that one I'm wondering, like, is he like a musical theater like Sondheim guy, or is that just like it is a thing that has to do with time, and it seems sort of like in his wheelhouse of the sort of thing.
Right.
The idea
in the initial in the initial press release, he talks about having loved the show or something along those lines. I think he maybe saw an off-Broadway version or something.
What are they doing in Bernie? What's they're doing a musical? Are they doing Music Man?
Oh,
yes, because I think because you see Jack Black in the in the, you know, the 76 trombone sort of like full like regalia.
That moment in Bernie where he sings that song on the drive, where it's like Love Lifted Me. So good. We love Bernie. Yeah.
Bernie.
Jack Black, one of the best actors to ever do it. Jack Between Black. Bernie and School of Rock, like.
Yeah, and it is sort of crazy how many guys sort of owe their career.
From the Linklater.
Yeah, of like McConaughey and Hawk and Jack Black. Now, and Powell. Yeah, of just like the sorts of guys that I guess it takes a Linklater to give a chance to in that way, which is fun.
I mean, yeah, well, we got early Efron drama, you know, out of High School Musical.
Yep.
Whatever. No, who else took a risk on a young Ellen Coltrane?
Yes. We're all the circle stands here.
That's post Boyhood.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess so. He didn't really.
Thanks, Richard, for making that possible. What else is he? Wasn't he on a like a Apple TV show recently or something?
Maybe
Eller.
I
always think about his daughter like begging to be killed off of Boyhood, and him being like, "It's not that kind of movie. I can't do that."
That's really funny.
It's not that kind of movie. It's very funny.
So true.
Yeah, I gotta revisit.
Movie would be crazy if the sister died. Yeah, that is one I'm very interested to revisit. As someone who saw that movie like when they were the same exact age as the Boyhood boy, and lived
at the end of Boyhood, you mean?
Yeah, literally. I'm just like, whoa,
my childhood.
I mean, I guess Merrily is filling that void for him, but I do wonder, like, what if he's just like. Turns out I got more Boyhood footage. You want to know what the Boyhood kid is up to now?
God, it, like in like 10 years, it's like Boyhood 2, Manhood. Like, yeah. It's like.
That'd be awesome. Secret Boyhood sequel? A real fuck you? What if Boyhood 2 won Best Picture? It's like The Godfather.
That's right.
Well, I think maybe now is a good time to wrap up.
Let's do it.
Any special presentations in the work of Richard Linklater?
Andy, you got anything?
I'm trying to think.
We just did it yesterday is the problem.
Right, yeah, we're double recording this week for listeners who maybe are spotting similar levels of tiredness, I don't know. Jon Stewart's hosting The Daily Show again. I'm very much enjoying tuning in to him every week. He's still got the same rhythms and everything that make me laugh. You know, it's an interesting model, the him doing one night a week or whatever. I don't think it's been entirely successful as far as like providing the best like timely sort of coverage or whatever, and I you know, it hasn't been super successful as far as like I'm not watching the ones he's not hosting really. I think I watched one episode of a Jordan Klepper episode and was like, I'm gonna wait until he's back on Monday. But yeah, it's like it's interesting to have him back on the old seat, and you know, just remembering all his tics about like the things he tends to say, like to an audience reaction to a joke, or like the when he tends to break or whatever, like all still sort of being him. It's very interesting, because of course, you know, I've talked about this before, I watch that show every single day for like 10 years or whatever, like, you know, I never missed an episode starting from at a certain point in high school. Yeah, it's an interesting force to have back in my life right now.
I would like to recommend an album by a band with a name that will put people off, but I do think their music is very good and people should listen to it regardless. This is a album that came out last week. It is called Half Divorced and the band is called Pissed Jeans. It's sort of like noise punk sort of vibes. It's like fun. It's funny. I enjoy the sound of it. So people should listen to Pissed Jeans.
Andy, do you think you'll ever listen to Pissed Jeans?
No.
No coffee goal?
I mean,
Andy, the other album I almost plugged was by a band called Mannequin Pussy.
Okay, don't like that either. But
if you had to pick one,
which one?
Yeah.
I guess Mannequin. It seems like a higher brow item to sort of be like, maybe there's
Mannequins are expensive.
There's like an elevated sort of like Andy Warhol sort of thing going on that might be like a little more of a way in for me than.
Do you
just
feel
like
a kinship?
Look at
to
these
Andy
jeans
Warhol?
That got piss in them. Like, do I look? Do I what?
Do you feel a kinship to Andy Warhol as a fellow Andy?
I suppose that is the area where I feel the most kinship to him, is that we share the same name.
Do you ever have that? Do you have, like, Andy pride?
Sure. There's Andys who I'm like, hey, keep doing what you're doing.
Andy Samberg?
Sure, although it took me a while to come around on Andy Samberg.
Whoa.
I was not a Lonely Island guy. Andy Muschietti, no comment. I don't think I've seen any of his stuff.
Andy McDowell?
Sure. Groundhog Day.
Spelled differently, though. Does that change it?
Yeah, sure. Does that change it, or is it just the sound?
I mean, that's... I have no beef with A-N-D-I-E. It's
the
Drews.
Do you think
we
could get a whole episode out of what Andy... Does Andy feel kinship with? We just list Andy's...
I'll tune in next week to find out, folks.
Can we go up with a list of 100 Andes?
Really? I mean, yeah. My enemies are the Drews of the world.
Sure, because they've taken the other route.
Yeah, the illogical.
Did you ever
route.
Try Drew?
No, never.
Why are you Andy I? Since a child?
Yeah, I am named after my great grandfather who went by Andy, although his full name was Anthony and not Andrew.
Whoa, so it's Anty.
I mean. I don't think that's what people called him, but I guess if you wanted to get technical of how a name shortening works, sure.
I mean, my father was called Andres, and some people would playfully call him Andrew.
Sure.
That's funny.
That's fine.
I don't think he ever got an Andy, though.
No. Yeah. You call me Andrew sometimes, Emilio, I feel like.
I feel like it's funny to just say a person's like entire name. Yeah.
If you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
Colin, did you nothing to plug? Nothing you ate, nothing you saw, nothing you read.
I'd say watch Lost Highway. I watched Lost Highway.
Yeah.
That's really good.
One of the Lynches I'm missing. Need to...
I've never seen that, although I think that's, I own it on DVD, Blu-ray, I think.
It's kind of a, it's a very interesting movie, obviously, as all his are. But I was like, I didn't really know about it other than sort of the Robert Blake thing that is kind of famous as a meme. But it's very noir-y and like very
it had like
fun to follow in that regard. Yeah, there's The Perfect Drug is on the soundtrack. Sure. It's got a crazy soundtrack.
Yeah, the Nine Inch Nail music on the soundtrack is really all basically everything I know about Lost Highway. Also, they did company in it.
No. Pullman.
Pullman
and Arquette and Balthazar Getty, Robert Loggia, a nice Richard Pryor cameo. But it's just like a fun noir take from Lynch. And it's just like a movie that ends and instantly you're just like, oh, yeah, let me put this on again.
Yep. And with that, if you want to donate money and you enjoyed this episode, and I think, you know what, I'll say it right now, I think this was a good episode about a good topic.
Wow.
Sure. With that, I like when we talk about a thing. Anyway.
If you enjoyed that, you can donate money at ko-fi.com/CANNESI coffee.com/cani. And with that, I'm going to release our audience. Bye.
Bye. Bye.